why we love the Tang Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of what's seen as one of the greatest imperial dynasties in Chinese history. Episode 17, Painting the Tang. In this episode, we turn our gaze on the Tang preference for realism in their paintings. I'm Bob Jones, and in this podcast series, we're getting to know the Tang Dynasty and attempting to discover how, at its height, it was possibly the most prosperous, interconnected, and innovative country in the world, with a rich and influential legacy that survives to this day. All through this series, we've been able to give quite a lot of detail about what it was like to live in the Tang. And that is largely thanks to the dynasty's artistic community, the literati, the calligraphers, the writers, poets, and importantly, also the artists. The artistic artifacts that remain from the period are a priceless catalogue of how people lived, what they believed to be important, and what they wore, and so very much more. Painting after painting chronicles the life and loves of the Tang, not only giving us an amazing window on their world, but also inspiring later generations and peoples in far-off lands. Did they do it consciously? Did they see this art as perhaps leaving a legacy for future generations? Or was it all a bit like the billions of social media posts that we make today, revealing our thoughts, latest meals, and sights that make our hearts skip? For immediate throwaway consumption. Who can tell? Academics point to two kinds of painting, realism and freehand. In Europe, freehand came first as an expression mainly of faith. Not until the Renaissance did European painters begin to dabble and then excel at realism. In China, it was the other way round. It wasn't until the later Song Dynasty that the freehand drawings became the dominant style to express emotions and feelings and beliefs. Think of the paintings of fantastical mountains, rivers and rock gardens. Until then, paintings were seen more perhaps as snapshots, slices of life, or mementos. The Tang Dynasty basically belonged to the era of nobility. Nobles liked realistic painting. It allowed them to show off their power and possessions much more than a pretty picture of a landscape. One of the key problems with early European paintings was perspective, but this problem had long since been solved in China. Perhaps you know the famous work Along the River during the Qingming Festival by the Song Dynasty artist Zhang Zeduan. He was using tried and tested techniques to create a three-dimensional realistic panorama. Consider also the terracotta warriors and horses, individually shaped and molded. These skills had existed since the Qin Dynasty, some 800 years before the Tang. This sense of realism is vital to understanding the importance of figurative art, which represent real people, places, and events. Imperial portraits were regarded as crucial to the underpinning of a dynasty. It was a very clear representation of lineage. Here was proof that this emperor had a right to rule. Not unlike in European stately homes, where you might find the portraits of the entire ancestry of a local lord staring down at you from the lobby of a great house. It was tangible proof of bloodline. These portraits screamed, "This is why we are in charge." Because of this, the best painters had to get these paintings just right. Some of the biggest names during the time of the Tang were Wu Daozi, regarded as one of the great masters of the 8th century. He is literally the stuff of legend. In one story, It is said that he was commissioned to paint a landscape by Emperor Xuanzong on his palace wall. His work was hidden behind a screen, so only the emperor could see it. It was a wonderful vista of forests, high mountains, waterfalls, paths, and clouds. One day, Wu Daozi invited the emperor to visit a cave in the painting, saying that a spirit dwelt inside. He clapped his hands and the cave opened. The artist went inside. Before the emperor could follow, the door closed and the painting vanished. Wu Daozi was never seen again. Yan Liben was a painter and architect. With his brother, he designed Tang imperial mausoleums, and they were probably responsible for the 6 famous stone horses in front of Taizong's tomb at Jiaoling, which have survived as the best examples of early Tang relief carving. He also designed ceremonial costumes, constructing palace buildings and building bridges and ships for military purposes. A one-time prime minister, he was also the main court painter for 3 reigns. One of the common factors among the great painters of the Tang was, as far as the emperors were concerned, they were one of us. Nobles, senior courtiers, each had a privileged insight into matters at the heart of Tang culture. It was very much in their interest to get every detail 100% correct. As you might expect in a dynasty that lived for rules and regulations, paintings had to conform to certain standards in order to be seen as truly great. Most importantly, they had to have a spiritual quality, expressiveness, contain a message, and then they needed to be realistic. Plus, the subject matter needed to be appropriate to the commissioner and the viewer, usually one and the same. As mentioned in the last episode of the podcast, the edges between scholar official, artist, and military were very blurred, and this impacted on the contents of paintings which catered to the tastes of the nobles. In common with aristocracy the world over, the nobility of the Tang loved horses. Understandably, perhaps the best horse painter of the Tang dynasty, such as Cao Ba, was also a military official. Wei Wutian, again a famous painter of horses, served as a general during the reign of Emperor Xuanzong. Needless to say, they all painted war horses rather than ornamental ones. In short, the subjects adored by Tang painters were emperors, heroes, horses, and nobles. But faith was also an important inspiration. Buddhism and Taoism were both very strong and inspired works with a mystical theme. Only later, in the Song dynasty, did Confucianism become dominant, affecting art in a much different and more fundamental way. Many paintings have long since been lost. Much of what we know about Tang painting comes from sketches and scrolls made, perhaps in preparation for larger works, and also from the walls of tombs and pottery figurines. But even these meager artifacts can tell us so much, like the number of distinct Hu people and ethnic groups from Central Asia and even Europe, which reflected the cosmopolitan nature of Tang society. This factor is lost in later works in the Song dynasty. In addition, we can see a large number of female images in tomb paintings, pottery figurines, scroll paintings, and calligraphy from the Tang dynasty, which is sadly relatively rare in history. Through the murals in tombs, for example, you can also see the aesthetic changes involving women, their appearance, and clothing. For example, we can see a large number of fuller figure women in mural paintings of the tombs of the Middle and Late Tang dynasty. These were often training pictures rather than showing the daily lives of women in Tang society. Many images were, more often than not, moral in nature, such as in The Biography of Women by Gu Kaizhe, who lived in the earlier Eastern Jin Dynasty, which outlines the moral constraints that men have placed on women, emphasizing the so-called female virtues. The painting Ladies Wearing Flowers in Their Hair demonstrates how pictures of beautiful women can provide insight into ideals of feminine beauty and the social customs of the Tang Dynasty. It shows five palace ladies and a maidservant amusing themselves in a garden scene, two playing with a cute dog and teasing it with a duster. So, summing up, what we can say is that painting in the Tang Dynasty not only expressed the real world, but also the spiritual one, fact and fantasy, preferably both at the same time and certainly in detail. We have to rely on a limited number of paintings, scrolls, tomb murals and pottery figurines which have survived the ages. Undoubtedly, there was, at one time, so much more, but it has all been lost to the sands of time. Special thanks go out to San Lien Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.